Welcome to the Work is Weird Now podcast. Whether you're nearing retirement, entering the workforce for the first time, or caught somewhere in the confusing muddle in the middle, you're likely sensing it and you're probably living it. We know we are, and we want to know why. Listen in as we interview experts and everyday people like you to find out how best to navigate the ever-growing weirdness of work in the modern age.
Hi, everyone. We're very excited to have Holly Hobbs with us today. We've been chasing her a bit on LinkedIn. I was very eager to have her on. She is founder and CEO of Apprentivia. She's known as the Apprenticeship Girl. She's a trailblazer in early career strategy and Gen Z talent attraction. She had an experience where she faced over 30 rejections trying to get an apprenticeship for herself, and in the end secured a Microsoft degree apprenticeship and then turned that experience into a mission, which is to help young people navigate the apprenticeship landscape. She founded Apprentivia, an employer branding agency, in order to connect companies like British Gas, BT Group, and Volkswagen Group with Gen Z talent through TikTok marketing. Holly's campaigns regularly generate over 449,000 organic views per client, and she's built a TikTok community of more than 44,000 aspiring apprentices. She's also authored 2 apprenticeship application guides and was featured live on Good Morning Britain during A-Level Results Day 2024. Welcome, Holly. It's so great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. Buzzing to be here.
But we're buzzing too, honestly. We're buzzing too. So we start all of our podcasts with a question. And what is your weird work moment of the week? And Alice, you can go first this week.
Sure. Those of you who listened to the episode with Toby Crosby, who talked a lot about fatherhood, will know that he discussed something that I actually have a lot of personal experience with, but have never actually heard articulated before, which is that when you are a parent and you have young children at home, especially kids who are going to nursery, they get sick. And obviously you have to take time off to deal with them being sick. But not only that, but they get you sick. So it's like living with a petri dish and you basically get every bug and it really does affect your work. And what was interesting about this week is that I went to Brixton Academy on Saturday night to a Flaming Lips concert. And the lead singer, who is, I think, in his 60s, maybe, but has very young children at home, got up on stage and you could tell right away that his voice was scratchy. And he was like, "I'm so sorry. My kids brought home some bug and it's affected me and now I'm sick." And so he's up on stage in Brixton Academy. Even rock stars have this problem. So I just thought that was funny. How about you, Dan?
Well, that he is technically in work, isn't he? So he's a live concert. Yeah, hilarious. I mean, I can vouch for this household has been pretty sick in the past 10 days.
It's not really?
Grim, but we are through it. And I'm sure another cold will arrive soon. So my weird work moment is etiquette on company chat, so you know, Microsoft Teams, whatever. This is not us being aligned with Teams, but you know, the chat channels. And I had an instance where somebody put a string of question marks, and I was like, that's not okay to do that. That's like passive aggressive / just aggressive. And in the past year, I've been like, do you know, there's been other moments like people vaping on calls, and like, you know, you think, is this like what's the etiquette now with virtual forums for work? And
people
is this
too
normal
comfortable,
or is it weird? Like, I actually asked the question of myself. I'm like, am I missing something now? But yeah, it made me reflect on the past few years of virtual.
Interesting. Teams feels a bit too much like it's getting like WhatsApp now for work, isn't it?
There's a very blurry line.
It's
the FaceTiming, the texting with the question mark. Oh gosh.
Yeah. I was on actually mat leave sort of 18 months ago, and my friend voice noted me, and her Teams went off in the background, and she was like, "I bet you haven't wanted to hear that for a long time." And I've just given you like PTSD.
Oh gosh.
I was like, "Turn it off, mute it." Anyway, Holly, what is your weird work moment of the week?
So mine is very different this week, actually. So it's weird for me because it's very different, but for most people, hopefully it's not weird. So this week I decided on Wednesday to take half a day off and go to the beach with my friends on a working day. I've never, ever have done that. I never do something like that. I'm a bit of a workaholic, so focused in the week. It almost feels criminal for me, actually, to take time off in the week. So that was a very weird moment for me. But I must say, such a good moment, and actually one that's really benefited me this week, and I needed it. So I'm really happy for that.
Love that. And we've actually had a few coaches on the podcast who talk about the unpicking, the giving yourself permission to do stuff during the normal working day. When you're a founder of a business and things like that, almost the 9 to 5's just, you know, gone, isn't it?
So taking
that time actually does you a world of good, even though it feels like you're really doing something wrong.
I know it does. And also, do you know what? I realised as well, if you give yourself a cut-off point where it's like, right, 2 o'clock or 1 o'clock, I've got to be finished, like I've actually got to be finished because I've got to leave, then all of a sudden you wake up a bit earlier and you get all your work done in those hours before that would have probably taken you the whole day before that. It's really interesting.
It's good when you give yourself a condensed period to be productive. Just like, right, smash it out. Brilliant. That's a great weird work moment. So one more question for you is, are you where you thought you'd be in your career right now?
Oh, I think no, I'm not. But for a good reason. So I started my career off at Tesco's and then realised I didn't want to go to uni, wanted to do an apprenticeship. When I chose that, I was like, oh, it'll be easy. You know, apprenticeships are easy to get into. And then faced over 30 rejections before I got into that apprenticeship and had a really great time there. Started to document my journey and realised that loads of other people across the UK feel the same way. They don't always want to go to university. They struggle to get into apprenticeships. And so all of a sudden I was in this apprenticeship thinking, I have so much knowledge that I want to share and I need to be sharing it because I need to help other people not go through what I've just been through. And so all of a sudden I had this other purpose attached to my journey, and I started my business off the back of that, trying to help other young people. And then that just grew and grew and grew and evolved from there. And I realised actually there's another purpose that I want to help young people with. And that's also understanding the world of work. And what I was doing to help that was then creating video content. So it just kept, my purpose kept evolving. And I kept seeing new things that I could help employers with, young people with. And so when I first started out in my career, I knew I wanted to be entrepreneurial. I knew I wanted to do something to help people, but I never knew it would be like it is now. I never knew I'd be where I am today because it just kept evolving. So yeah, definitely not where I thought I would be right now, but I always thought I would be doing something entrepreneurial. So it's twofold.
I think one of the things that would help me, if you don't mind, because I think apprenticeship is a model that people are very familiar with in the UK, but isn't necessarily a model that we see in other countries. Can you just explain to me what it is and how it works and what that relationship is like with the company and how long it tends to go and what the expectations are on both sides?
Yeah, of course. So an apprenticeship is essentially where there are three parties involved. One, an employer. So that's the employer that's paying the apprentice's wage. They're working there, they're getting their work experience. Two is the training provider or university. So depending on what level, there's 7 levels of apprenticeships from level 2 to level 7. Level 2 is equivalent to GCSEs. Level 3 is equivalent to A-levels. Level 4 and 5 are called higher. They're like foundation level degrees. Level 6 is a degree apprenticeship and level 7 is a master's qualification. And so depending on what level it is, depends on whether it's a training provider or a university. And then the third organisation that's involved is the Endpoint Assessment Organisation. It's the awarding body. It makes sure that the apprentice completes their qualification, tests them throughout that, and awards their qualification. And so what happens with an apprenticeship is the apprentice is working 80% of their time on the job with the employer and 20% off the job. We call it off the job hours. And that is with the training provider doing the training and doing the qualification. So how that manifests is essentially, usually for an apprentice, about 4 days a week is on the job and they'll have one study day a week with their university, training provider, whatever that is. It can be very different. For some apprentices, it could be an online lecture, which is what I had. Some could be in a college 1 day a week, some could be at the university 1 day a week. Some apprenticeships, for example, in automotive, Volkswagen Group, who I've worked with before, have this, and British Gas, they're not in automotive, they're in engineering. But those guys have block week trainings where actually the apprentice will just go for a certain amount of weeks a year to do their training rather than having it one day a week. It's very different depending on what sector it is.
Okay, and then at the end, like for you, I assume you did your GCSEs, you decided you didn't want to go to university. Why did you decide that wasn't the path for you? Why did you want to do an apprenticeship instead?
So I went on to do A-levels. So I did my A-levels, and the main reason I didn't want to go to uni was because I didn't want the debt. If university was free, probably would have been different. But I just didn't want to get myself into debt, and also I didn't have a clear vision as to what I wanted to do. So equally, if I didn't have a clear vision, I wasn't going to spend all this money if I wasn't 100% sure on what course I wanted to study.
Okay, and then at the end of your time with Microsoft, you then have what is effectively an equivalent degree to if you'd gone to university. Is that correct?
Yes. So yeah, if you're doing a degree apprenticeship, you have the exact same degree, but you've just got all that work experience in your belt. So it's great.
Can I ask a quick question? You mentioned earlier that there is a perception that apprenticeships are really easy to get onto.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I think I have that rooted in me for some reason that I couldn't tell you why. Why do you think that is the case?
I think it's the case because at school and college, university is pushed and most people tend to gravitate towards that. So when young people are at school, college or parents or whatever, they're seeing that, so they're saying, okay, there's only like two other people in the class, for example, that is going down the apprenticeship pathway. So this is the case for a lot of other people in schools and in parents' network and things like that. So it's like, well, obviously in their head, because that's their sphere of knowledge, they're a lot of people's perceptions are, well, it's going to be easy then because most people go to university. That's what everyone hears nationally as well. So that is why most people think that, because university is the preferred pathway for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think that's actually right. It's the alternative for people who maybe it's wrongfully perceived that can't go to uni rather than don't want to. I think it's that shift. So that's, and I hope people listening will maybe think about what their perception is, because I think now the options on the table are so much vaster than just the university route, because I hear from so many people uni equals debt, and is it actually worth it?
That's
what we're exploring here, and the amazing work that you do is shining the light on what is possible for apprenticeships.
Okay. Yeah, and I think I sent you I'm constantly sending poor Dan like pictures of statistics and graphs and things like that. But yesterday, the one that I sent her was in The Atlantic, and it references the US, but it basically shows the new grad gap. So the number of young people who are coming out of university and can't find employment, I think we all know there's a number of things that are affecting that, right? So there's not so many entry-level positions, things like that. But also, I think there's some big questions around whether or not university education is just being sort of undervalued, maybe because so many people go or whatever it is. And obviously, once you're in a kind of situation where you've got a lot of debt, that becomes quite a risky position to be in. So are you quite a big advocate for apprenticeships versus university? Would you say that's true?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I think as well, the education system is quite outdated for what young people are facing today, and the ever-changing trends in different sectors and AI and things like that as well. So for me, it's not just about the debt. It's also about, I actually want to learn what's actually going on in the world current and the real life things and how to tackle that in real life and learn from the people that are doing the do and not always just talking the talk, if that makes sense. Obviously there are lecturers out there that have worked in the sector and are doing the do as well. I'm not saying that, but it's not the same for all universities. So yeah.
And that goes back to, I think, to mainstream around GCSEs. We had another guest on saying, you know, his son's doing bloody algebra, N equals whatever, when actually he needs to understand a bit more about financial planning, how to budget. Is he going to really need to understand mortgages at some point in his life? You know, like these real practical skills rather than a suite of GCSEs that fit the mainstream process but are potentially not fitted the right mold. Like, if you want to go and be a mathematician or something, yeah, great, follow that path, but does it need to go on for so long? I don't know, I'm here to be challenged. But there's, you're saying, like, people are leaving going, I'm missing some life skills,
yeah,
that are going to impact me pretty quickly after leaving whatever level of education comes first.
Yeah, exactly. And with apprenticeships, you are also not being just left out in the open after you've got your qualification, because you've already got the job as well. So I see, and I've spoken to a lot of graduates. I was doing some street interviews actually a couple of weeks ago, just randomly in London, asking people, and even the people on the streets are telling me this, that they've done a university degree, they've graduated, and then it's like, boom, they haven't got a job, or they're having to go for an entry-level job and they've just spent all this money educating themselves. So there's that to it as well.
So what is it that's in your mind broken with the connection between apprenticeships and young people and companies that you are trying to fix?
Okay, so firstly, it's how young people don't understand what's inside of jobs. So there's loads of words that will be thrown around, like consulting, accounting. But what does that actually mean? In school, we know exactly what a teacher does because they're right there. We probably know what a vet does if our parents have got pets. A doctor, because we've been to the doctor. Those professions we can conceptualise in our brain, but others we can't. And I heard a lot of companies say, we want to attract more young people from different backgrounds, but then they weren't educating these young people on the route, or they weren't creating some sort of content that actually resonated with them because they didn't know how to do it and how algorithms work and things like that. And it's all great putting information out there to try and get rid of misconceptions or educate people, but at the end of the day, if you don't know how the algorithms work, you don't know what hooks are like and how to actually get a viral video, then you're never going to reach the young people that you want to reach, especially on social media, obviously. So That's the piece I was trying to bring in, is that marketing piece, is that understanding of these platforms and how young people think, and bridge that gap between these employers that they can also understand it.
So what are Gen Z's belief about work?
Oh, okay. So, great question. A lot of people think Gen Z are lazy and they can't be asked to work. That is not true at all. I did a post on my TikTok last week now, and there's this trend going around that it's like the Apprentice theme tune in the background, and you write something like, I'm bored, tell me why XYZ, and loads of people just start commenting what their opinion is on it. And I did one saying, I'm bored, tell me why there's almost 1 million young people in the UK that are NEET, which is not employment in education or training. And oh my gosh, that's now reached about 70,000 people, and I've been flooded with comments as to why that is. And the comments are basically saying young people aren't lazy, but they've been faced with a cost of living crisis, a pandemic, political issues, where actually it's making them feel as though, is this a safe environment and a safe place to build a future in? And so there's all these other things that are happening, as well as social media and what's been portrayed as a successful life on there. And so Gen Z are actually really keen to work. That was a key theme that I see amongst young people that was on that post. They want a job so badly, but one, they can't find the jobs either in their local area. Two, they keep getting rejected because they don't have the experience that the employers are telling young people that they need. And three, they keep getting rejected because they just are rejected because they don't have those skills and how to apply for the job. So they are really hungry to get a job, to get that experience. They want to be successful. They want to live the life of their dreams. They want to be in their authenticity, which is a really key theme for Gen Z. They want to live something that's really, really authentic to them, but they're struggling to. And that's why there's this large number of young people now that are neat. And that's why then the press just assume all of a sudden that Gen Z are lazy. It's not. There's all these barriers and obstacles there.
That stat when we had our discovery call made me so sad, and I still I can almost feel a lump in my throat to think that that's that there's that many people that are not working or in education, or it's really, really scary. I suppose I would want to get into the whole trust around brands. Like, we're marketers and brand is our professions, and we know that people don't trust brands, they trust people. So that's why definitely marketing and comm strategies are shifting. You have to have brand profiles, yes, but it's all about people connecting with people, so people producing employee generated content and all of that stuff. And we'll really get into that in a moment, because I think your positioning is perfect around how to talk to this cohort, you know, this of people. But what then are Gen Z's workplace expectations?
So a lot of people think their workplace expectations are a pool table and pizzas on a Friday night. But that's not the case at all. Their workplace expectations is to have some kind of purpose behind their work. So why am I actually doing this? What's the purpose? What is my impact in the organisation? To have an idea of their remuneration, so how much are they going to be paid, and what does that progression look like actually as well? What does progression look like in terms of payment and also the role? So it's purpose, it's progression, it's getting remunerated. The key main three things that Gen Z want from the workplace: they want to feel like they're accepted as well, that they can be their authentic self, they can show up as who they are at work and be accepted for that and not have to fit into some kind of mold. They also want to know that the company they're working for is also making a great impact on the world and their environment as well, and that they've got some sort of social responsibility in there as well. And then I'd say the last two things are community, really important as well. They also want to have that element of community that's not just online, because there's this sense of false community amongst our generation because of social media, and actually that can make us feel quite lonely sometimes, and that connection in person is really important to us. And then I'd lastly say mental health and support around that, and not, as I said before about the whole laziness piece, I think this often gets confused with the whole mental health thing. Gen Z want to be able to have a work-life balance. They want to be able to, as I said, live a life that's authentic to them and enjoy their lives. And for our generation, work isn't the be-all and end-all. Yes, we want to make an impact. We want to earn money. We want to do well in our careers, but it's not something that we want to be doing for 20 years at one company for our whole lives. And so we want to make sure that there is flexibility there. There's some sort of balance, and that our mental health will be considered.
It's interesting because when we started this, you obviously talked about wanting to take a Wednesday afternoon off to go to the beach, and that you're actually quite a workaholic. And the first thing I thought was, it's so funny because already what I hear people say about Gen Z is not true, because here we have somebody who is actually feeling a bit like taking a break maybe isn't the best thing. But
yeah, I always say that I'm literally like the antithesis of what the press portray Gen Z as. I'm literally completely different. I am working all the time. I struggle to take time off. I'm actually having to learn that time off is good. I need to take it for my mental well-being. And I think I need to be shouting about that more, really, and how I'm actually the antithesis to it, and showing people that this isn't what our generation is like. We really do want to work. We really want to make impact. And we're working on it, and we're putting our all into work.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, there's always a danger of kind of tarring everybody with the same brush, too. You know, obviously, there's a lot of variety among people who are of that generation. But just to sort of feed into the stereotype for one more second, I just have one more question about something that I hear about Gen Z a lot, which is that there seems to be an expectation of progression that is maybe faster than what previous generations went through. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, such a good question. I think social media is a big part to play with this, because on social media the rhetoric is, oh, I'm 19-year-old millionaire entrepreneur. I posted about this once on LinkedIn, actually. There was this viral post on Instagram, And it was this guy that held something like a million subscriber YouTube plaque. And he was like, 19-year-old millionaire YouTuber does XYZ. And this stuff is going online. It's appearing online all the time. And so, to be honest, I was someone that brought into that as well. When I first started my company, I was like, right, I'm going to be launching these £10 ebooks, and on launch, I'm going to make like 30 grand. It's going to be absolutely easy. It's just going to come to me like that. And then I was slapped in the face with reality pretty quickly. It just happened like that for most people. Obviously, there are some exceptions, but for most people, it doesn't happen like that. I believe mentorship can really be a great thing to support that, because if you've got a mentor and someone that can show you that pathway and what it's typically like, and you can have that honest conversation with, then it's great, because they can set the expectation, but then they can also, you can also be honest and say, look, with AI and this new technology that's happening, and actually all this information that I can access online now, I can move a bit quicker, and that's okay. And obviously, I know I keep speaking about social media a lot, but it's such a big thing. And now, at the tip of our fingers, there's so much more information that young people can access nowadays. And that's why there's so many more Gen Z directors now on Companies House and things like that. So it's a bit, it's twofold. It's like, yes, there are some young people that are a bit unrealistic, like I was myself, and play into this narrative where, you know, I can get everything in a couple years and get to that position where actually it's not always like that. But then also equally, there is so much more information out there now where we don't have to go to a library and get books like people might have had to have done years and years ago. It's actually all at our fingertips. We've got AI now that just spits out information like that. And so we can learn things a bit quicker, but there needs to be that balance.
I am going to speak from the past 5 years as a line manager here. So 2020, everyone was terrified of losing their jobs because of COVID and furlough and all of that. Then 2022 spun around and it was a great resignation. You couldn't pin an employee down. The market was shifting. People were in demand. We would have candidates at round one and they were offered jobs by the time we were getting to the second round, which was the week after. Grads were coming out of uni, and this is in the marketing world, like, I don't want to use the word demanding, but their salary expectations were 40k baseline. Yeah. And it was just, it was nuts, absolutely nuts. And then it's almost gone full cycle again another couple of years where roles are very square peg, square hole. Like, there's no room for manoeuvre. It was, you know, looking around in the job landscape, it was, you can find the person who has everything you want rather than 80-20 and a bit mouldable. So it's gone absolutely crazy. And now we're in 2025, just checking. but we've got AI now coming along and it's like, right, it's going to delete all the jobs, yeah, you know. Yeah. And it's the strangest landscape. But in that time, for me, that's been such an unbelievable roller coaster of just jobs in that time. I have hired an apprentice through an apprenticeship scheme, which was amazing. I've managed a portfolio of Gen Z, and this is not me sweeping statement, but there were traits that I'd noticed that I hadn't noticed probably from the previous 5 years. Very boundaried around their time of work, I took me by surprise. But I was also like, hey, I'm classic millennial. My manager asked me to jump how bloody high and how high could I go, and I'm unpicking that because that's how I was brought up, like through work. And whereas this it's different. Like, they've, Gen Z's on the whole have been very boundaried with time, and I was being like, okay, like, respect to you for that, almost, and being like, hey, but they're, you know, getting the job done, of course, is a part of that. I was going somewhere with this. I think it's more along the lines of how quickly things are changing, and, you know, that demand for high salaries with zero experience, bonkers. But now there's obviously lots of different alternative routes coming through for people. Hopefully that makes sense. I just felt, as you were talking, I felt so many links back to my experience as a manager in the past 5 years and seeing it happening. But the pandemic has had a lasting impact, and now I think the AI revolution just feels like it's almost been tinkering away in the background, and the past 6 months it's just gone boom.
Yeah.
You know? What do you think that means for apprenticeship level roles?
I think that means new apprenticeships coming out. There needs to be some sort of new standards come out around AI to teach young people. I think it means even like boot camps, skills boot camps around this, more integration of AI into existing standards as well. I've been in some conversations about that, to really get these people used to it and using it in their day-to-day jobs, because otherwise they're just going to lose touch of it and not understand it, and that's not what we need.
Yeah, I just want to go back to the neat thing, because I think that is those figures are really alarming, and I think we can all recognize why young people might be feeling a bit hopeless about the job market. And I've mentioned on this podcast before, I've got a 13-year-old daughter who's kind of like, why bother? Like, there aren't going to be any jobs for me in the future. And so what am I even doing all this for? That kind of thing. And it's a really difficult narrative to combat, because there are some, there are valid points there, right? There are valid points, valid concerns. We're about to face a real big shift in the number of jobs available, and certainly jobs for kind of lower skilled early market kind of candidates coming in. And I guess, how do we start to reignite some of that hope? You know, what do we need? What do companies need to be sort of saying to that age group? And what do you think they need to hear from organizations and from job providers that will help them to feel like they still have agency and engagement within the wider workforce?
Yeah, I think there's only so much of it that comes onto an employer's responsibility, really. And there's obviously, I think the whole piece really stems down from when someone's at school. And I feel like there needs to be self-confidence lessons and self-belief and things like that, really embedding mindset into the curriculum, because at the end of the day, that's what's going to get someone through tough times. But from an employment perspective, employers, the main thing that I've said in my own content off the back of getting all this feedback from young people is that if they aren't expecting someone to have work experience, to be so vocal about that and actually follow through with it and speak about examples in your current organisation where someone started off with no work experience, because from what I've seen, a lot of people don't have hope at the minute that there's any employers out there that aren't looking for some sort of work experience. I even saw comments from people saying they couldn't even get into their local Sainsbury's or local supermarkets that have typically been that place for these people that are at school to go and get their first jobs. So being really vocal about that is super important. And then also giving young people application tips is what needs to happen. And by application tips, I don't mean make sure you're sat in a quiet room for the interview, or drink water, or you can bring notes in. Those are things that people hear all the time, but they're not actually actionable or helpful. And so they need real tips along the lines of what can I speak about if I don't have any work experience? What are those examples? Or where can I go to research your company? What are the type of things that I should be researching? Things like that, and giving them examples, because they're not taught this at school. So those are the main two things that are going to really help young people to get into jobs, because at the end of the day, as I said, not everything is the employer's responsibility. And sometimes I'm just really conscious of making employers feel like they need to be doing all this stuff, and but it's not always their responsibility, obviously. So that would be what I'd say.
And what would, so given that we fully recognize it isn't all their responsibility, and it's, I think the more responsibility we give them, the less likely they are to engage the process.
Literally.
Yeah, but then that sort of falls to other parties, right? So is it about parents? How can parents help? Is it about secondary school education providers? Is it about the government providing initial, you know, additional kinds of training and things like that? Where do you think that responsibility should lie?
I think it should lie in schools, because if the schools are embedding it, then they're embedding it in the parents and the grandparents, because as the generations go, they're getting those tools, right? And I think it's easiest in schools, because obviously most children are going to schools. So you're getting all the people in one place at one time, and you're embedding it into those people. So I think schools are the place where it should be at, really, and there should be some sort of lesson. I mean, I remember we had PHSE at school, and that was more real world stuff, but it wasn't entirely useful, I'm not gonna lie. I don't really remember much from it. So there needs to be some sort of curriculum or lesson around mindset. I just believe it so much. Mindset is really the thing that I think would help young people get out of places that they're not happy with, because if they've got that ingrained self-confidence and self-belief, they're going to be able to think to themselves, I can do this. That's what I personally had. I made sure that I learned that when I was in COVID, actually, in 2020. I started scrolling on TikTok, right? Sounds weird, but I always say to myself, TikTok literally changed my life. Because I started scrolling and started looking at all this self-development content. I hadn't learned it at school or from anyone around me. And then I started learning about mindset, about manifestation, about self-belief, self-confidence, and how I could ingrain that in myself. And then because of that, I got myself through all these rejections, and I was like, it doesn't matter that I'm experiencing this. It's happening for a reason. I can still get to where I want to be. But if I didn't have that, then I would have thought, what's the point? I can't even get a job. It's been so many rejections. So I might have even fallen into that category. I don't know. But I believe it all stems down from mindset. And I think schools can play a really great part in that.
Can I ask you a question? Do you have a personal coach?
I do now, yes.
Yeah. And that's phenomenal. But like you say, you found it through a self-taught way via social media.
Yeah.
And I was actually listening to an amazing podcast last night on... it's about addiction, but addiction to dopamine and social media is now. The data was just blowing my mind. Mm. And we know there's a dark side to social media and the addiction side of it. And there's a loneliness epidemic. Mental health's been the worst it's ever been. And it's probably all linked back to this quick scrolling stuff. And I appreciate TikTok has revolutionized and changed your life in a phenomenal way.
Yeah.
But that's not the case for everybody. You've obviously 100%. Seen the opportunity to go, I need to work on my mindset. And I couldn't agree with you more. You have to work on these things. We've actually got an episode launching next week around mindset, which is great, but not everybody has access to that. And I think I couldn't agree with you more. It's how to get it into education. And is this something that companies even need to look at now?
Yeah.
People used to ask companies to help them on their professional diploma in marketing course. You know, I did 10, 15 years ago, whenever that was.
Yeah.
But actually now, are people wanting support on things like burnout, managing time, stress, confidence, imposter syndrome? Because they're things that are actually more relevant.
Oh my gosh, I know. I so agree with you. And that's why when you say, where do you think this falls into? I don't say social media, because it's not, to be honest, when I started scrolling on TikTok, it was just started. It was 2020. I wasn't addicted to it. But now it's not really the best place to be getting all your information because there's so many different contradicting opinions. But also, as you say, it can get addictive. So unless you have these habits where you've got self-discipline or you can manage your time on it, then it is difficult. And that's why I think it needs to be ingrained in the education system, or like you say, into curriculums, into employers teaching these people. It doesn't have to be just young people. I think everyone should be equipped with the knowledge. But I think I would love to see even an apprenticeship in this type of stuff. Something where they've got a module. It needs to be in the curriculum, a module on something like this, on mindset, confidence, self-belief, because it's not taught enough and we need it to be out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to talk about TikTok a little bit, just after we've recognized both the positives and the negatives of that environment. Dan and I are both like very happy to say that we're just generally terrified of it. We should be there. Our podcast should be there.
You should.
I know. And we just haven't got ourselves into that position just yet. But I think it would be really interesting to hear from you, maybe an example of a campaign that you ran maybe on behalf of an apprenticeship program within a corporate provider, and how you've been able to be successful in kind of reaching young people and making those connections.
Yeah, sure. So one of my greatest examples that I always speak about is my work with British Gas. So last year we run two campaigns, and one of them, we just did three videos that was on TikTok. So it was a video with a female apprentice that was actually a graduate who now manages a group of people, really great. A video with a female apprentice that spoke to us about why she chose British Gas because she didn't want to be at a desk all day. And then a video on the benefits that British Gas apprentices get featuring those two. And we walked through that for viewers. That got 600,000 views, that campaign. That's all organic, not paid ads. And that then translated into hires from the videos that I'd created, made up about 20% of their entire 2024 cohort. And 27 of those candidates were female. So it worked out to be about a 300% increase in their female candidates from when they last run that apprenticeship scheme. And also their apprenticeship page on Centrica.com was actually the most viewed page for 2 days in a row after that campaign. So it got quite a lot of traction and a lot of young people's eyes on their apprenticeship schemes, which is exactly what they wanted. So that was one of my best campaigns.
Amazing.
Very cool.
So if you were to just talk exactly to the employees, so talk about, you know, big corporate brands who just really want to, layman's term, understand what it is that you do.
Yeah.
Can you explain?
Sure.
That?
So layman's terms, I would say I help employers to attract apprentices through TikTok. That's exactly what I do.
So how do you typically work with them then? Do they sort of like, they pay you to go and run these campaigns for them? Is that sort of how it works?
Okay. Yeah. So they pay me to develop the strategy. Mm-hmm. They pay me to then create the actual content as well and then post it to my community on TikTok and Instagram. Some employers then go and post the videos to their channels as well, or they, like British Gas, have done, put it on their website so that people can see it when they land on there. But mainly it's tapping into my community through the content that I make for them.
Okay. And then how have you, I mean, obviously you are a CEO in your own right, and you're how old?
22.
22, sorry. I don't normally ask that question, but I figured
that's all right.
Since you're so young. How long have you been doing this?
I started my business about 3 years ago, but I wasn't full-time 3 years ago. It's evolved ever since.
Okay. And what have you learned about leadership and about running a business through this whole process?
Okay. So what I've learned about leadership, running a business, growing a business, is that actually it's not all about strategy. I used to think, right, I need to be thinking about what I'm going to offer my clients. I need to be constantly evolving that. I need to be thinking about my content strategy. Obviously, those parts are really important. But for me, the main thing has actually been who I am and my identity and my embodiment. That's been the most important thing for my growth. And I've learned that massively this year. Up until last year, it was all about strategy. What am I doing to grow the business? This year, it's been actually, I cannot grow anymore now unless I show up as a different version of myself and a version that has what I want and has the strategy that I want and the strategy that I want to deploy. And again, it's things around mindset as well. And it's not something that I've widely heard that's been taught. I've learned this from my coaches that I've been able to privilegedly get of getting the clients and working on my business. And so that has been the key thing to me. Who am I showing up as every single day and making sure that person and that person's actions are aligned to what I want?
So this week you were at the Apprenticeships Branding Conference.
Yeah.
And I love the summary, and you were just, there were some real points that you quoted about people just go create content. I think people believe that because we're in a social media era that it's quick and easy for everybody, and it's scary. It doesn't matter what point you are, it can feel very scary. So I just wanted to ask you if you wouldn't mind opening up a little bit more around that point you were trying to make, and you were saying that you've got some tips on how to do it. Would you mind sharing those?
Yeah, of course. So yeah, the point I was trying to make was, at conferences now I hear a lot of, the best way to attract talent is through your current employees, which, yeah, is so good. So get them to create content for you, get them to be pumping it out on your social media pages. But actually, I think a lot of people don't realise the time, effort and energy that goes into that. As a content creator myself, it's not something that's easy to do. It's literally a full-time job in itself, firstly. But also, like you say, there's so many barriers to it. There's fear of being seen, putting your opinions out there. It can be quite daunting. And there's certain skills that you have to learn, editing, even creating the content in itself. And it seems easy on social media. It seems like people are just pumping it out all the time, but it's not. It's a skill that has to be learned. It takes time, energy and effort, as I said. So the main thing that I say to organisations is that you have to develop some sort of program to actually teach these people what it is, how to do it, but also build out a program in terms of structure as well, and to set expectations. So make sure you're getting this consent from these employees, and you're getting buy-in as to why it's actually beneficial for them as well. So it's not just about your brand, actually is teaching them these skills for life. And also it's helping build their own personal brand, which is really attractive in today's day and age. So building out a program that sets expectations around how much content that they're going to be asked to create, and making sure that's quite low, so you've got more people creating little bits of content, so that you're obviously getting the diverse people on your page, but also you're not expecting someone that's in a full-time job that's also studying on the side to then be creating all this content for you. So yeah, those are my main points, and it's almost like creating your own framework, really. Your own framework for actually telling these people how to create this content, and your own educational system.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
So this is a big question, but I'm just conscious of time and want to make sure that we ask the big questions in closing. But if you had a magic wand and you could wave it and make the world of work better for the next generation that's coming up, what would you address first and second?
This is such a good point. Oh my gosh.
Take a minute, it's fine. No rush.
A wand where I could make the world of work better for the next generation coming in. Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For the alphas.
Yeah, where would you focus? Where would you focus first?
I just genuinely think that my focus always reverts back to mindset. And I genuinely believe that if we could equip more people with self-belief and self-confidence, then a lot of problems would be solved. So, you know, there's things like tell people how to get jobs, all this other stuff that I've said. And I don't know, developing, there could be like waving a magic wand, developing a new organisation where it's one-to-one mentoring or something like that. But I think deep down, like, it's difficult to fix so many different problems and so many different people's problems as well. So there's multiple magic wands that I'd want to wave. But I think deep down then, I think the root of problems is this mindset and the headspace that people are in, because you attract what you believe deep down in yourself. You attract what you embody. You attract who you are. And so if you can change what's deep down in you, then I think your external change, well, I don't think, I know your external changes, and you start to attract more opportunities. People say that talent is everywhere, opportunity is not. I disagree with that. I think talent is everywhere, opportunity is everywhere, but access to the opportunity and the belief system is what's not. Well, there's so much opportunity, but actually people's circumstances, people's support network, what's their mental health, their mindset causes them to not be able to access that opportunity. And I believe if we embed these key learnings around mindset into young people, then they're going to be much better equipped to go into the world of work and live the life that they want.
You know, that is such a hopeful and positive answer, because, you know, just as a parent of a 13-year-old, I mean, I think I've talked about this a few times, but obviously it occupies a lot of time in my mind, because I do see it's completely different what they're growing up in and what I did. But I think when I was a very academic person as a student. I was very focused on success from an objective standpoint, right? So achieving the highest grades, getting into the best university, getting the best job. I was quite competitive by nature. And I think what's interesting is when I had children. I thought I would be the same with them, which is probably how I started out. But it's interesting how your perspective evolves, not only because you become a parent and you realize that your children are different from you, but also the world mm-hmm. has changed so much. And yeah. actually those traditional roots just don't exist anymore and they're not valued anymore. And I have changed from being somebody who thought, I want my kids to get the best possible education, the best possible grades, and go and achieve the best possible thing, to if they emerge from this experience with self-esteem and self-belief and resilience, I will be 100% satisfied wow, with
I
that
love
journey.
That.
But it's so true, because honestly, wow. the only thing that they can control in this crazy world is their response to it.
Literally.
Right? And so
I
think, yeah, so I think that's kind of where we need to be focused now. And education needs to be focused there too, right?
This is
there's
the weird
so much
link
on...
coming at you both, right?
Okay.
When you were talking, Holly.
We love the weird.
The weird. And you're going to be like, really? But I've struggled with self-belief, imposter syndrome, all of those things. And I think because I enjoy coaching all of that stuff, but there are people who don't. I don't look at people who have self-belief and confidence and think, oh, you're arrogant, right? I don't think that.
No,
I think that we've
no.
moved on from there. Now, here's the weird link. When you were talking, Holly, I immediately thought of, I can't say his surname, Timothée
Chalamet.
Mildly oh. obsessed with him, but ooh, have been for ages. But anyway, it's Kylie Jenner's boyfriend, right? And he
oh.
won, was it, he did win the Oscar. Yeah, saying
this.
That like I know her, just dropping it in. Hi, Kylie, if you want to come on the podcast, let us know. But he accepted an award. I don't know if it's Golden Globes or the Oscars one, but his statement was, his acceptance speech was, thank you. I'm here and my goal is to be the best. And I know that people don't like to hear people say things like that, but that's why I'm here and I'm showing up.
Yeah.
And I didn't think, oh, you're arrogant or anything like that. I was just like, well, I feel like we've gone full circle where
yeah.
you can't strive to be the best in whatever your lane is. Like that's absolutely warranted, you know, whatever that may be. And what I'm really pleased at the end of this now is that I was that person, it was uni or nothing, almost seen as a failure if you didn't get there, blah, blah, blah. And that's coming from someone who failed her A-levels and whatever, all that baggage I'm carrying. But now the rise in the perception and change of apprentices and the other routes that are on the table now for my kids, you know, and Alice, what you've just said, it just feels that there's more opportunity out there and there's hope that we can have a nuanced route for kids that suit them and their future.
Yeah.
So I just think, Holly, keep shouting and doing what you're doing because it's phenomenal
Absolutely.
Work.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Yeah, I guess just to round off, I feel like everything you've just said, absolutely love it. And it made me think about how actually, I think what I'm trying to say is that we should be teaching young people in schools that they should have an internal locus of control. That's what I think.
Excellent.
And like you say, you can't control the outside world. And a lot of people think the right type of politics or the right political leader is the answer, but you can't control that. You can only control what's inside of you and what you think and what you attract. And I think that's the missing puzzle piece.
Well said.
How
can people find out more about you, Holly, or get in touch?
Oh, yeah, get in touch or find out more about me on LinkedIn, Holly Hobbs. You can also look at my TikTok. It's at How to Get an Apprenticeship. Same on Instagram if you want an apprenticeship or anyone you know wants one.
Thank you.
And thank you to everyone for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have any Work is Weird moments to share, please find us on LinkedIn and let us know what they were. In the meantime, have a wonderfully weird week, and we look forward to seeing you next time.